Wondery Plus subscribers can listen to The Vanished ad-free right now. Join Wondery Plus in the Wondery app or Apple Podcasts.
Every piece of official documentation ends with my mother in 1991. She never renewed her driver's license. She never filed taxes again. She, you know, more recently now, a few years ago, she would have been able to file for Social Security. She's just basically disappeared in that winter of 1991.
I know we'll probably never know, but I also in my heart know something bad happened to her.
You know something horrible happened, but you don't really want to accept that something horrible happened. So you invent stories or scenarios in your head. I mean, I spent a significant portion of my childhood thinking that she was okay someplace, off living her life somewhere, because I didn't want to accept the fact that she was gone or that something horrible had happened to her, needing to believe that she was alive.
Judith Guerin was last seen in late January of 1991 in Sodus Point, New York. Judith had unexpectedly lost her husband in 1988. And she was left to care for their five children by herself. After her husband's sudden death, something shifted within Judith. The once doting mother was overwhelmed by grief and began drinking heavily to ease her pain. This caused her to drift away from her children emotionally and physically. At one point, Judith left her children to seemingly fend for themselves. Her daughter Amy eventually got custody of her younger siblings, while Judith lived with her boyfriend, Curtis. The relationship between Curtis and Judith was toxic. According to those who knew her at the time, Curtis was significantly younger than her and was only with her due to the money she had obtained after her husband's death. Curtis was abusive towards Judith. Judith had sporadic contact with her children while living with Curtis. However, during her last contact with her children, she seemed to be embarrassed about her recent actions and indicated that she wanted to come home and be with her kids. After this conversation, Judith's children never heard from her again. All of her belongings were left behind. The only thing missing was Judith. When asked in regards to her whereabouts, Curtis claimed that Judith had left him to move to Florida. The police, with no reason at the time to suspect foul play, believed this story. Judith Guerin seemed to disappear without a trace. She has never reached out to her family or friends and has never accessed her finances or used her Social Security number. Over time, police began to investigate Judith's case and attempted to question the only person of interest in her case, her former boyfriend, Curtis. But he has refused to cooperate. So what happened to Judith Guerin in 1991? Did she decide to leave her life of grief behind and start over somewhere else? Or did she fall victim to a horrible act of violence? I'm Marissa, and from Wondery, this is episode 207 of The Vanished, Judith Guerin's story. Audible offers thousands of popular favorites, exclusive new series, guided wellness programs, comedy, and exciting new voices in audio. As an Audible member, you can choose one title a month to keep from their entire catalog. The Audible app makes it easy to listen anytime, anywhere. While traveling, working out, walking, doing chores, you decide. I like to listen a little bit each evening while I'm cooking dinner. And it's great for my evening walks, too. Recently, I've been listening to Lay Them to Rest by Laura Norton. It's a fantastic audiobook. You don't want to miss it. New members can try Audible free for 30 days. Visit audible.com/MIA or text MIA to 500-500. That's audible.com/MIA or text MIA to 500-500. For this story, we were able to speak to numerous people who knew Judith. Three of those people were her children. Here's Judith's daughter, Amy, speaking about her mother prior to her disappearance.
As a kid, there were five kids. My father was a little bit older than my mother. They seemed to have, a good marriage. She was mostly a stay-at-home mother. But then as an adult, looking deeper into learning about yourself and, growing up, I think my mother always had some self-esteem issues. And I think she may have had, she definitely had like a compulsive personality. She was a heavy smoker, a bit of an overeater. And I think that after my father passed, that turned into the problem with alcohol that she developed.
After the death of Judith's husband, everything changed. The loss seemed to be too much for Judith to handle. Her behavior and the way she interacted with her children shifted drastically. It was as if she had become a different person. Here's Amy discussing what life was like leading up to Judith's disappearance.
She just was easily, led astray after the passing of my father. And that's where, the problems came in. But my mother really never drank, not even like a glass of wine at the holidays or anything. It just wasn't her routine or habits or anything. And after my father passed away, she pretty quickly started drinking like scotch, and she always had a drink, and she came home drunk a few times. She fell down one time and broke her wrist. And, she just started, I think she just was using it as a coping mechanism to deal with her grief or the fear of being alone and having these kids and, having to figure out what to do. So she pretty significantly and quickly started using alcohol excessively. I think it was just that she stopped really functioning as a parent and began to really develop a life outside of the home and outside of our family unit. She had friends that we didn't know and stayed out, quite often. Before, she was kind of like, just a homebody, that her only circle of friends were my father and, some neighbors that had kids the same age as hers, but she just significantly changed her whole really routine. She started to go out. She stopped getting groceries. And, I just stepped into I assumed the parent role, and like the head of the household. That's really what happened.
We spoke to one of Judith's sons, Jeff, and he has similar feelings about what happened leading up to Judith's disappearance. He was around 11 years old when his mom went missing. Here's Jeff sharing his point of view on the situation.
When I was a child, when I was very little, she was very focused on us, on her kids. And I just remember feeling like the center of her universe. And it was a really good feeling. That changed after my dad died. She started to drink and she started to stay out and she started to not come home, which was not characteristic of her. I remember just being a little kid, not really understanding what was going on, being left very confused. The personality shift was so great and so significant that, it was very much like a Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde kind of experience. I never remember experiencing her being selfish. And I never remembered her being self-centered. But I really think that a lot of it had to do with alcohol and drugs, the shift in personality and grief.
After her husband passed away, Judith inherited some money. Money that was supposed to help her and her children make ends meet. However, Judith used it for other things.
She inherited some, you know, for 1991. We can't track it exactly, but, you know, the police were involved in looking at. My grandmother had died the year before, so she got some money from the sale of her house and some money from that. And then my father had quite a bit of insurance, so she got probably between $200,000 and $250,000. So in 91, that was a significant amount of money. And she just, unfortunately, I guess, couldn't really deal with the realities of having five kids. You know, my brother Mark is 6 years older than I am. So he was married in his early 20s, but myself, my other three younger brothers were still definitely in need of parental guidance that she just couldn't provide by herself. So she kind of stopped really performing like the duties of the house and stayed away all the time, which was just emotionally traumatic for us kids because, you know, our parents never even really got a babysitter for us when we were younger. They had a bunch of kids and we all just did stuff around the house and we're always all together. So the trauma of my father passing away somewhat unexpectedly and then, you know, the way that my mother dealt with it, it was just, I could only describe it as it was kind of like living in a tornado.
Eventually, Judith began dating a man named Curtis Pucci. And things began to spiral further.
She, you know, met this younger guy around the kitchen restaurant area in Albany. She just started seeing him and drinking a lot. And really, she sold our house. And she bought a house down in another city where my brother lived. But the house was like in shambles. And she put very minimal money into it. And she left us there. And she went and moved with him from like the Albany area to up kind of to on Lake Ontario. It's a 3.5-hour drive. So basically, you know, it was like just being abandoned. You know what I mean? We didn't have really the means to get up there or anything like that. So I did go to court and get custody of my younger brothers. And I maintained contact with my mother pretty regularly in trying to almost like wake her up. You know, we were like, what are you doing? You got to come home. We spoke really regularly. And then in the winter of 1991, I think it was towards the end of December, she called and she had said that, you know, she had been the victim of like a domestic violence incident. And she was realizing the big mistake that she had made by leaving the area, going to live up there with him, and that she was very embarrassed. She would think about coming home, but she was embarrassed, but she was going to. Ultimately, the end of the conversation was that she was going to, you know, start to wrap things up there and come back. And that was the last time I ever spoke with my mother. I have a police timeline of a time in January and a time in earlier in February when they made visits to her home because she had written a couple bad checks out there and she had gotten a DWI. So they were trying to serve her with warrants, and that's when they encountered her boyfriend who told them just randomly that she up and moved to Florida, which I just know that didn't happen. So the police tried to make contact with her 2 or 3 times. The last time the police tried to make contact with her was in February of 91. They really didn't have a reason not to believe him, even though he was a career criminal. You know, he said that she moved away because she didn't want to face her charges. And they ended up believing him, and he ended up selling my mother's possessions, her trailer, basically all the things that she had out there. And then he ended up, you know, moving on and still living a life of crime. The next person that he went on to live with in Rochester, he beat them so severely that the judge, when he sentenced them, said that had not other people that lived in the building intervened, he would probably be sentencing him to murder instead of an assault charge. So unfortunately, the things that, you know, happened were that I had a baby in 1991 too, and I was 19, 20 years old. And our life was, you know, just so stressful and there was no money. And I don't want to say we ever forgot about our mother because we never did, but we really had limited resources to try to find her. We made several contacts to the sheriff's department out there, a police department that no longer exists because it's a very small town. But they do have documentation of us calling and trying to get missing persons reports filed and trying to get them to go and question Kurt. And really at that time, unfortunately, they just all were under the assumption that she did try to go to evade the charges. But then in 2003, when I met my husband, who is a sheriff in Albany, I asked him to reach out to the sheriff's department up in Wayne County where she went missing from, and maybe as a courtesy, they would, you know, run her driver's license or look into it somewhat more professionally than they had before. And they actually did. And we finally got to file a missing persons report. The things that the police have come up with was every piece of official documentation ends with my mother in 1991. She never renewed her driver's license. She never filed taxes again. She, you know, more recently now, a few years ago, she would have been able to file for Social Security. She's just basically disappeared in that winter of 1991.
Quip, the makers of the Quip electric toothbrush, want you to know the one single discovery that matters most for your dental care. It's simply this: if you have good habits, you're good. That means brushing for 2 minutes, twice a day, and flossing regularly, no matter what brand you use. Quip makes that simple, starting with an electric toothbrush, refillable floss, and anti-cavity toothpaste. Quip's electric brush has sensitive sonic vibrations with a built-in timer and 30-second pulses that guide you to a full and even clean. The Quip floss dispenser comes with pre-marked string to help you use just enough. Plus, Quip delivers fresh brush heads, floss, and toothpaste refills to your door every 3 months with free shipping, so your routine is always right. One thing that I love about Quip is that it declutters my sink area and makes traveling with an electric toothbrush easier. Plus, there's no wires or a clunky charger, and it runs for 3 months on a single charge. Join over 3 million healthy mouths and get Quip today, starting at $25. And if you go to getquip.com/vanished right now, you'll get your first refill free. That's your first refill free at getquip.com/vanished. That's spelled GETQUIP.com/vanished. Quip, the Good Habits Company. We all know there are things in life that you have to compromise on, but when it comes to your health, there's no compromise. So don't settle for that one doctor that isn't really addressing your needs. Instead, check out ZocDoc, the place where you can find and book doctors who will make you feel comfortable. And you can even search by location, availability, and insurance. ZocDoc is a free app and website where you can search and compare highly rated in-network doctors near you and instantly book appointments with them online. Once you find the doc you want, you can book them immediately. You can filter specifically for ones who take your insurance, are located near you, and treat basically any condition you're searching for. The typical wait time to see a doctor booked on ZocDoc is between just 24 and 72 hours. That's it. I use this and you should too. Go to ZocDoc.com/vanished and download the ZocDoc app for free. Then find and book a top-rated doctor today. That's ZocDoc.com/vanished. ZocDoc.com/vanished. Speaking with Amy, it was clear that Curtis has a history of violence. The pair seemed like an oddly matched couple, so we asked Amy to tell us more about the relationship between Curtis and Judith.
She brought him around us pretty infrequently because we were pretty vocal about not wanting him around, and we could all just tell that he had no good intentions. So, you know, my father was also a sheriff in the Albany County area, and we kind of were raised with that, you know, law enforcement suspicion, I guess, if you want to call it, that he instilled in us. So, you know, none of us ever trusted him. And we pretty much could tell that he had no good intentions. So the few times I did meet him, I just thought he was a dirtbag. I guess he did have a lengthy career as a criminal here, you know, before meeting my mother and after meeting my mother. I just felt like he was using her, you know, there was no commonality in their relationship. I just felt like he was using her. The girl that he was dating at the time that him and my mother started dating, she said he was never violent with her. I know he has a history of violence. I'm not sure it's all domestic violence, but also, you know, in mentioning this, after my mother disappeared, supposedly that he told everyone she moved away, this girlfriend and him reconnected, and she took a couple trips up to SOTUS to see him because their relationship had ended really abruptly and badly, and he had a lot of her possessions. So she went up to where my mother lived with him, found it very odd that my mother would leave and leave all her possessions. And he actually also in these couple visits that they had, he gave her a piece of jewelry that was pretty significant that my mother always wore. It was a necklace. That necklace eventually made its way back to me. So I have that now. It was a pendant that had been my grandmother's that my mother got after my grandmother passed away. Just things like my mother would never be leaving somewhere and leave that significant piece of jewelry behind.
While speaking with Amy and her siblings, they all mentioned a woman that Curtis was dating before he got involved with Judith. We were able to speak with this woman. She still lives in fear of Curtis and asked that we not use her real name, so we will just refer to her as Michelle. Here is Michelle, Curtis's former girlfriend, speaking about their relationship.
So I dated Kurt for a couple years, I guess. And I was actually living with him and had gone away for a month for training for a job when he and Judy left and moved away together. And then he had taken all my stuff. So through a weird situation, I had found out he and a friend had a boat together. And then the boat was stolen or whatever happened, I don't remember. But the police found it, and they had contacted me, and they happened to mention that less they knew he was living in Sodus Point by Lake Ontario. So I went out with a friend of mine one day, and we just happened to find a trailer park, and I saw one that was, all duct taped up, and I'm like, that was, something he would do. So we were knocking on the door and somebody came out next door and said, oh, they're gone, you know, for the winter. Who are you looking for? And we told him and he said, oh, they live over there. So it was probably a month or two later that he called me and he told me that she had left, that she had written bad checks and there was a warrant out for her arrest and she left town. So I never really thought too much of it until about a year later. Now, I have to tell you, the Kurt that I knew was funny. He was really nice. My friends loved him. I never saw him angry, nothing. I mean, he never really got mad. He was just seemed like this really mellow, easygoing guy. And we were together a long time. We didn't fight. I was stunned when he left.
According to Michelle, Curtis was good to her in the sense that he had never physically harmed her or got upset with her. Curtis abruptly leaving her was strange. Could it be because he saw that Judith was in a fragile state and he could easily prey upon her? Michelle told us how she found out about Judith disappearing and her suspicions.
So a year after he had told me that she left because the police were after her, a friend of mine told me that, do you know, nobody ever heard from her again. Not her children, not nobody has ever heard from her again. And I don't know why, but I said, oh my God, he killed her. Based on the person I knew, I don't know what made me think that, but there was just no reason that she would disappear and never, I don't care if you had to drive 500 miles to a payphone to call your kids so they couldn't figure out where you were, right? If that were the true story, she would have at some point reached out to her children. So I just knew. I knew that had to have been what happened. So he had left because she had come into insurance money when her husband passed away, you know, and I think he saw like an easy way out. I don't know how much money she had, but clearly it wasn't enough because they were out of money. Then, like, after I had gone out there, we were in touch again. There's no proof that he killed her, but he killed her. And then when years later, the state police finally decided to investigate for Amy, because when they were younger, you know, I guess nobody there would take her seriously because she was, you know, a teenager. I found out, like, this huge, huge record that he had with some pretty serious crimes. And at the time, he was also in prison again for pistol whipping his roommate. Like I said, I don't know. I just knew. And he had given me some jewelry of hers. You know, and at the time, you know, I was young and stupid and I didn't really think too much about it, but it was jewelry that she always wore. So if she had really left, I don't think she would have left that jewelry. I don't have much information. I just know.
We asked Michelle, based on the record that Curtis has, if she believed there was a reason why he was so different with her than he was with others.
From the record that he had, he really hadn't changed. I think he was just different with me because, like, I think he truthfully was in love with me until money became a better idea. You know, and there was a lot of drinking and stuff going on back then. But, I mean, based on all the stuff the troopers told me he had done, he was never a really nice guy. He just was a really nice guy with me. He'd been in jail a bunch of times, like short days, but I never knew any of that. When I met him, he was working two jobs. He was a nice guy. Then he broke his back, and then he never, you know, he wasn't working. So, I don't know. But from the person that I knew, he always seemed like he wanted to be a tough guy. You know, he had a 9mm pistol, but he never carried it. But he'd, like, take it out, and, I mean, it was never even loaded, at least what I saw.
Finally, we asked Michelle what she thinks happened to Judith.
My guess would be he took her out on his boat and probably shot her and dumped her overboard in Lake Ontario. Yeah, I mean, it just seems to me that way because there would just be no evidence.
As previously stated, Judith has 5 children. Her eldest son had already moved out, was married, and had 2 children of his own, so he wasn't around with his other siblings as their mother began to spiral. The children who were with Judith, and eventually with Amy, once she obtained custody, all had to deal with a lot of emotional stress at a young age. Not only did they lose their father, but they also lost their mother long before she disappeared. For this story, we were also able to speak with David Guerin, one of Judith's sons, who was a young teenager when his mom went missing. Here's David speaking about Judith's behavior and lack of involvement in her children's lives after she became involved with and moved in with Curtis.
We didn't know where she was a lot of the time. And by that winter, like, the heat had broken in the house and she didn't even care to get it fixed. And so, like we were a bunch of children living in a house with no heat in the winter. And we're in upstate New York. It was just more, you know, not that we weren't clothed and fed, like there was always food in the house, for the most part, as I remember. But it was just, you know, we were a bunch of young children with no parent to guide us, really, you know. Like, mom didn't really care what was going on with us in school. Mom didn't. But like I said, like, you know, she started letting things go at the house and then getting angry at us for being angry at her about these things not being taken care of. You know, this is that when you look back going through things, like, she was obviously not in a good place either emotionally, or, you know, like, and I'm sure Amy's told it to you, which, you know, it's become obvious to us. Our father was the one who kind of kept it together. And maybe, like, she was very young when she had my oldest brother. So, you know, I think she got to the point that, you know, whether it was the substance abuse or whatever, you know, she felt like she had raised her children and this was now her time.
David told us about something that happened that forever changed his relationship with his mother.
To kind of boiled down when the heat was refusing to be fixed. For me, this was like a big moment in like all this happening was she, like I said, she was refusing to like fix things at the house and she wasn't home a lot. And we didn't know like where she necessarily was and all this. You know, we were kids, we were close, you know, in talking, we had remembered a summer camp not too far away from like maybe a 20-minute drive from where we were living that she had looked at as a possibility to buy. And I remember we got, you know, Amy got us together and we just went and drove to this place. And it turned out she had bought this camp and was kind of living there. Like there were items from the house that were missing that we had found. Like there was a TV missing from one of our rooms. There was a radio missing from somebody's room. Like she had taken these things to this new house that she was basically camping out at and coming home when she needed to. Like that was kind of a very hurtful thing to me that she did that. So it might stick in my craw a little more clearly.
David's feelings of anger and resentment would only deepen during the holidays.
For me, it culminated in that first Christmas. She just came in and threw each of us $200 on Christmas morning and then took off and kind of went and did her own thing. At that age, you don't know any better. You don't know what to do. You know what I mean? Like, so even with that, like I said, like I was number four or five and I was kind of like mom and dad's both little, you know, one who kind of told them what was going on with everybody else and stuff. Like I was usually, by the time I was say 9 or 10, was the one who was kind of fishing what people needed for Christmas and then going out Christmas shopping on the sly with mom and stuff. And yeah, so that was kind of, you know, it was just the not really caring about the holidays anymore. And again, like I said, like I don't know how sharp my dates on it are, but yeah, and it just over the course of that whole year, really, she was just kind of a missing parent. And when she was home, she was kind of the party parent who like let us have our friends over and let people drink wine coolers. And you know what I mean? She was the quote unquote to the other kids, cool mom. Not to us, you know, it was kind of embarrassing to us. You know what I mean? That, and people tend to think it's cool, but when you want a warm meal and you just need a hug or something, that's not there. So like as the year went on, like, you know, our interactions were all pretty strained, but I think at that age too, you're going through that kind of trauma. You're just kind of on automatic going through things too. So she had decided she didn't want to live in the house we were in anymore because it reminded her of dad. And so, you know, we had gone around and started looking at new houses and stuff. My oldest brother at this point was married with two young children. And he lived in the next city over. We lived in Cohoes. This was Lansingburg, which is like right over a bridge. And she had looked at a two-story like apartment building that was, you know, with two very small apartments, two three-bedroom apartments. She had looked at this house as a possibility. And, you know, none of us were really interested in it because it was very run down, not the nicest place at all, really. It was very close to my oldest brother's house. And she had ended up buying it. And only when we actually physically had everything packed and were beginning to move it, she did not move her things in with us. Like she had them put into a storage unit or in the garage behind the house. And that's kind of when we learned she was taking off with this guy, Kurt, who had, you know, kind of been around, but at that age, and like, I had no interest in this guy at all. Like I just, something I didn't like about him. He was, it's not, you're not my dad. It was, he was not a good person. He was, you know, this biker drinker, just, you know, that's every time we saw him, they were around drinking this and that. I think I remember us even talking to her about, we understand you might move on and see people. This is a little too soon, and this is not the right person. And that's kind of when it came out that we were moving into this house and she was moving off to SOTUS with this guy.
David told us about the last time he remembers speaking with his mother before she went missing, and how long it took for Judith's family and the police to realize that she had actually disappeared.
I really wasn't interested in talking to her, but there was one phone call where I guess Amy was talking to her, and they were both very upset, and, you know, like Amy begged me, please just get on the phone and ask her to come home. And so I did. And like, that would be the last time I remember talking to her. She was, you know, I'm sorry. I don't know what, and, you know, and it was, I said, whatever, Mom, just come home. And that was the last time I remember talking to her. As far as her being missing, I think it was Amy was the one who kind of has held the torch for her. So Amy was the one who kind of started getting worried that she hadn't spoken to her in X amount of time. And I know, like, I don't know exactly when she started getting in touch with, like, the SOTUS area police department, but I know her initial speaking to them was when she hadn't spoken to her in a while. I can't put an exact date on it. I know she had spoken to them, and like the SOTUS police department was aware she had bounced checks and had some like DWIs up in that area. So they were convinced maybe she had just disappeared to avoid any lawful repercussions from that kind of stuff. I guess it just went kind of quiet for a few years there. And there really wasn't much known other than she probably took off. But then I know, like I said, Amy's the one who's really, like I said, carried the torch for her about this. So it took maybe when I was in my mid to late 20s when Amy finally got her declared missing. This was that late 80s, early 90s when technology was not as readily available as it is now. So, like, you know, this is like our phone calls were still on landlines with her when she was calling us. The internet was in its extremely early days, if at all. So, like, you know, communication with people was either mail or phone calls at that time. Now that I'm in my 40s and can look back on things, everybody's a victim of their own upbringing. She had her own issues. I understand that. I don't think that excuses her treatment toward us or anything like that. But I think being roughly the same age as her, I can understand that she wasn't in control necessarily of her own situation.
This message is sponsored by Greenlight. When you're a parent, you'll have your fair share of big talks with your kids. One of those big talks should involve money, and Greenlight can help with that. Greenlight is a debit card and money app for families. You can send your kids instant money transfers, get real-time notifications of spending, manage chores, and automate allowance. I've been using Greenlight with my older two kids for years. One thing that I love about it is that I can set up recurring or one-time chores, customized to my family's needs. And then my kids earn an allowance to reward them for a job well done. Not only does it motivate them to actually get the chores done, but it also teaches them a bit about financial literacy and independence. They're learning to earn, save, and spend wisely. So stop putting off the money talk and start putting your kids on the right path. Sign up for Greenlight today and get your first month free at greenlight.com/vanished. That's greenlight.com/vanished to try Greenlight for free. One more time, that's greenlight.com/vanished.
The Vanished is sponsored by BetterHelp. With social gatherings picking up after the winter, it can be easy to ignore your social battery and spread yourself thin. It's a good time to think about the right amount of socializing for you. Maybe you thrive around people, or maybe you prefer more alone time. Therapy can give you the self-awareness to build a social life that doesn't drain your battery. A therapist can help you learn how to set boundaries so you feel empowered to be the best version of yourself. Everyone can benefit from therapy. It's not just for those who've experienced major trauma. So if you're thinking of starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try. It's entirely online, so it's designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. Just fill out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist and switch therapists anytime for no additional charge. Find your social sweet spot with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com/vanished today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/vanished.
Due to the fact that it took many years for Judith to be considered a missing person, it's likely that any vital information or evidence is long gone. Despite that, authorities are still doing what they can to find answers as to what happened to Judith. For this story, we had the opportunity to speak with Sergeant Matthew Hilkert about the current status of Judith's case.
My name is Matt Hilkert. I am a sergeant assigned to our detective division at the Wayne County Sheriff's Office. I've been in law enforcement for the last 18 years.
We were curious as to what background information Sergeant Hilkert had in regards to the time leading up to Judith's disappearance.
It was her daughter, Amy, that first called. My understanding was they had been estranged for a while because Judith had kind of abandoned them. Their father had been deceased, and she had gotten some money from that. And then just on her own, it hooked up with some other individuals and came down to Sodus Point, New York, and really had not had anything to do with the family until the daughter, I believe, had some grandchildren and wanted to introduce them to their grandmother, you know, try to have some sort of relationship, which put us behind the eight ball by quite a few years because nobody had been looking for her until then. So I think we're down to within the day, because she had some court appearances here and we had some deputies that had dropped her off from unrelated stuff. And she also had missed court dates very shortly thereafter. So we have that little window in there. And between that and her work schedule from her last shift to her shift that she didn't show up for, you know, that kind of stuff, we narrowed it down.
Sergeant Hilkert was not the first investigator on the case. We asked him how long he's been investigating Judith's disappearance.
Yeah, I mean, the first time I laid eyes on this case was 6 years ago. And so I had to catch up on, you know, all the previous detectives that had worked on it and review what they've looked at. Other outside agencies have looked at it and offered their advice and stuff like that. So since I've been on the case, I set up a couple ground searches around, you know, where she used to live. We had cadaver dogs out there. And we try to re-interview everybody that was still living or even in the area. Unfortunately, you know, a lot of people have medical reasons where their memory's shot. Some people are deceased and some people are no longer in the area. So it's been difficult.
As previously stated, Curtis Pucci has been the only person of interest in this case. We inquired if Sergeant Hilkert has ever been able to get any conclusive information from Curtis, or if he has ever been able to confirm Curtis's story about Judith leaving him almost 30 years ago.
No, we've not corroborated any of that story. He's definitely a person of interest to continue to talk to, being as she's still missing, but he has not been cooperative with us. Even since his release from prison, he has not spoke to us other than to tell if he wanted to, you know, go to a lawyer.
Finally, we asked Sergeant Hilkert what he thinks happened to Judith.
I think she's got the wrong crowd and didn't know how to respond to that or act with that. And he definitely was living off of her money that she had acquired after the death of her husband. You know, there's no doubt about that. But, you know, for the background that the other detectives had done prior to me getting the case, it does sound for all intents and purposes that, you know, he was a violent guy, an aggressive guy, and they had a lot of disputes in public. So, you know, very easily could have been something gotten out of hand due to the, just the violent nature their relationship appeared to have had. That's the route I would take.
When it comes to what happened to Judith, her family believes that there's only one person to blame, Curtis Pucci. They believe he holds the answers to everything, but his refusal to cooperate with police has put up roadblocks in their search for answers. Here's Judith's son Jeff with more on that.
I believe she was the victim of domestic violence. I believe she was in the clutches of alcoholism, and I really think that she had no fight left in her. And honestly, I think just thinking about how much I care for the children in my life, how much of a motivator they would be for me to take action. I mean, who better to take action for than your children? And she couldn't. She was paralyzed. I don't think that she was able to leave voluntarily. And I just feel that one of the truly sad things in all of this is that it took 28 years for people to wake up to the fact that she was the victim of a crime. The local law enforcement of the municipality where she was were very quick to write her off for whatever reasons, you know, and I think that that is unfortunate. And I think a lot of it has to do with the fact that she was a woman. And I think that she was a woman, she was a person with no means. And she was a person with a substance abuse problem.
Amy agrees with her brother, Jeff. All roads lead back to Curtis Pucci.
I really don't believe there are any other possibilities. I mean, I suppose there's always the crazy... Well, the other thing is, though, she didn't like her car. Like, he still had her car for a time after she disappeared. So how did she get somewhere else? You know what I mean? I suppose there's always a slight chance that some natural disaster happened to her. And by that, I mean, you know, maybe she was hit by a car, or maybe she was in an accident and, you know, either her body wasn't found or her body wasn't identified. You know, I know there's always a slight chance of that, but I don't believe that she ever left that trailer. I think he killed her and, you know, she's out there. That's what I think. I think that she pretty much quickly went through, you know, all the money. And when all the money ran out, the guy didn't have a use for her anymore and probably wanted whatever little bit of jewelry, or he wanted to sell her trailer and just wanted to basically profit as much as possible. And probably in an argument, he killed my mother. That's what I believe happened. And I believe that, you know, she was pretty, like I say, she was overweight, maybe 240 pounds. He's a skinny guy with supposedly a bad back. I believe there's woods by where they live. They lived in a pretty rural area. I don't think she's far from, you know, where they live. That's my personal belief.
Judith's children believe that she's gone, but that doesn't make it any easier to deal with, no matter how many years have passed.
I've lived the majority of my life without my mother, and so, I mean, at this stage of my life, I know that, you know, she's gone, she's not coming back, and that it was at the hands of foul play. And it's hard to accept, but it in some ways makes it easier to go on because there's not that constant, is she alive, isn't she alive? However, I guess there is still that childlike wish somewhere deep inside that, you know, she's alive and everything is okay, which is the real pain and the real torment of not having any sort of closure or finality or disposition. And, you know, I've said this to people before. I mean, people in society are trained in certain ways, like how to deal with death and loss. Nobody trains you how to deal with something like this. There is no training. There is no preparation. Like, I work in a hospital. I work for the the Department of Psychiatry of a hospital. And I was talking with coworkers today about losing my parents at an early age. And they were asking me how I lost my parents. When I share with people that my dad died when I was 10, and I always say I lost my mother when I was 11, some people pry deeper. And I will, depending on my comfort level with that person, you know, go into detail. But people can't believe the struggle of what you deal with when you deal with the loss of when someone's been pulled from your life and someone's a missing person. Because most people's experience of it or reality of it has to do with shows like Law and Order, CSI, where this horrible thing happens and within 45 minutes, there's a resolution. They catch the bad guy. You know, one thing I realized is that five people can be in a room and witness the same event, and you'll get five different stories about how those events occurred. And that is just the nature of being a human being. And I think that I have been able to realize that good people can do bad things and still be good people. My mother was someone who was flawed, as we are all flawed in ways. And because she was human, she was someone who was hurting, and not consciously, not intentionally, and not directly, she was hurting, and hurting people hurt people. It's not unsure what she set out to do, but I think the road to her self-destruction lies in the fact that she was lost and trying to ease her own pain.
So what happened to Judith Guerin back in January of 1991? We know that she had spoken to her daughter Amy and expressed guilt and embarrassment over her actions and told her that she wanted to come back home. The police have been able to narrow down the time frame that Judith was last seen by speaking with her employer and cross-referencing her court dates. When she didn't show up for court, her boyfriend, Curtis Pucci, told police that she had left to move to Florida to run from her charges. The police had no reason to think that Curtis wasn't telling the truth. People run from charges all the time. The problem is that it would be years before Judith's disappearance was thoroughly investigated as a missing persons case. A lot was lost with the passage of time. When Judith went missing, she left behind everything, including her car and jewelry that she was known to wear all the time. In fact, Curtis Pucci gave his ex-girlfriend one of Judith's most prized pieces of jewelry. There is no record of Judith after January of 1991. Who had the motive and opportunity to harm Judith? Her family believes there is only one person, and that's Curtis Pucci. Did Judith express a desire to return to her children and Curtis stopped her so he could keep the last of her possessions and sell them? Did he get angry with her and things went too far? Was he using Judith for her money and had no use for her after the funds dried up? Or did Judith go to Florida, as Curtis claimed, and has been living under another identity for nearly 30 years? Judith's children don't believe that she's alive today. They're still searching for answers as to what happened to their mother. The passage of time has not made their loss any easier. Judith Guerin was last seen in late January of 1991 in Sodus Point, New York. At the time of her disappearance, she was around 200 pounds, had blonde hair and hazel eyes. If you have any information regarding the disappearance of Judith Guerin, please call the Wayne County Sheriff's Office at 315-946-5773 or 315-946-9771.
It makes people uncomfortable to think that at any moment somebody important or close to you could vanish. And what would you do? How would you go on? Because people can't imagine how you would go on. And I get those questions too. How do you go on? And I tell people you have no choice but to go on. And it's agony. And it's unbearable. And you have good days. And you have not so good days. But the only choice you have is to move forward without that person, unfortunately. And I think that she was truly disenfranchised and disempowered. And how sad that is, that we don't have the same reverence or respect or dignity for the life of someone because they are deemed or viewed as lesser. I believe that my mother's story has purpose. And I believe that there is healing in sharing. And I believe that if people can learn that there are resources out there, that there are resources out there for victims of domestic violence, that, you know, there are resources out there for substance abuse, that people don't have to suffer alone and in silence, that people don't have to just accept or take abuse. If that could be taken away from my mother's story, then I'm happy.
That brings us to the end of episode 207. I'd like to thank everyone who spoke with us for this story. If you have a missing loved one that you'd like to have featured on the show, there's a case submission form at thevanishedpodcast.com. If you'd like to join in on the discussion, there's a page and a discussion group on Facebook. I'm on Twitter at thevanishedpod and also on Instagram. If you enjoyed this show, subscribe now and leave a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, CastBox, or wherever you're listening right now. Do you want to help support the show? There are a couple things that you can do. One way to help The Vanished is by supporting our sponsors. You can find links and promo codes in the episode notes. Another way to support the show is by contributing on Patreon, where you can get early and ad-free episodes. Join me next time. I'll be covering a case from Washington. Thanks for listening.
Support for this podcast and the following message come from Corient. Corient provides wealth management services centered around you. They focus on exceeding your expectations and simplifying your life. Corient has been helping high achievers just like you enjoy their lives more fully, preserve their wealth, and provide for the people, causes, and communities they care about. As one of the largest integrated fee-only registered investment advisors in the U.S., Corient has deeply experienced teams in 23 strategic locations. Corient has extensive knowledge spanning the full spectrum of planning, investing, lending, and money management disciplines. Leverage Corient's exclusive network of experts to craft custom solutions designed to help you reach your financial goals, no matter how complex they may be. Real wealth requires real solutions. For more information, connect with a wealth advisor today at Corient.com. That's Corient.com. Corient.com.
Welcome to the small town of Chinook, where faith runs deep and secrets run deeper. In this new thriller, available exclusively on Wondery Plus, religion and crime collide when a gruesome murder rocks the isolated Montana community. Everyone is quick to point their fingers at a drug-addicted teenager, but local deputy Ruth Vogel isn't convinced. She suspects connections to a powerful religious group. Enter federal agent V.B. Loro, who has been investigating a local church for possible criminal activity. The pair form an unlikely partnership to catch the killer, unearthing secrets that leave Ruth torn between her duty to the law, her religious convictions, and her very own family. But something more sinister than murder is afoot, and someone is watching Ruth. With an all-star cast led by Emmy nominee Sanaa Lathan and Star Wars Kelly Marie Tran, Chinook is available exclusively and ad-free on Wondery Plus. Join Wondery Plus in the Wondery app or on Apple Podcasts.